All righty. Thank you very much, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a Tuesday afternoon. And I just have a feeling we are between the lake effect fingers here in downtown Chicago. Quite a snow this morning, and there could be more on the way. We'll keep you updated on that throughout the afternoon. One of the first things I saw on social media today was an Instagram picture from our guest, John Najarian, about the weather. John, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Yeah, I had to put that one up this morning because normally I'd be flying out to New York on Tuesday, but couldn't even get out there today because of the heavy snowfall.
Yeah, and so but you knew that last night, didn't you? Your flights must have been canceled.
Yep, they were. It was I was jumping on a private with some friends.
Oh,
and they had nowhere to land, so we basically said let's put it off till Wednesday. Looks like it'll be good on both ends tomorrow, but I don't want to jinx us. Yeah. I'll just cross my fingers and say it looks like it, but I don't know yet.
John, I got to say, I don't know a lot about flying, but one of my rules is you always should have a place to land before you take off. So I think you made a good decision.
I was going to say that's a good plan, and we're going to learn to live by that rule.
All right, so tell me about the airline stocks today, because here they are facing a rough day. We've got flights canceled in Chicago, but nothing compared to New York and the East Coast. I think where the last number I saw was over 6,000 flights canceled. So it's a rough day. I don't know if it speaks to their long-standing economic health, and yet they're getting hit today on Wall Street. What's that about?
Yeah, well, and it's really counterintuitive when you look at the longer-term implications of lower crude oil prices, which, of course, mean lower fuel prices for airlines as well as consumers in their automobiles. So, yeah, it's a bit of a head-scratcher today. Obviously, some people want it out. They pushed these stocks pretty darn low. We saw a lot of institutions coming into Delta Airlines and American Airlines buying up calls, upside bets on those two stocks. So I think this is a temporary thing, Stephen. Obviously, they build in a certain amount for travel disruptions like this, which even though they're not flying and that consumption of fuel is their number one expense.
Yeah.
Having disruptions like this means that maybe they got to refund a fair amount of air travelers, and that's not something that they're fond of doing, of course.
And you mentioned the price of oil. Saudi Arabia looks like production is up there, so oil prices they've been generally on the way back up, haven't they? But not so much today.
Yeah, they were because of those agreed upon production cuts that they had put in place, but those production cuts were from a pretty high level. They had just ramped up in November, Steve, to an additional 400,000 barrels a day, and they chose to make the production cuts from that level rather than where they had just come from, 400,000 barrels lower. So the net effect is really that people perhaps were pricing in a little too much of the impact and not pricing in as much of the fracking that would come back online with prices north of 50. So sure enough, we've gone back down and tested a level today that we haven't seen since November of this year, 2016, sorry.
No, it's okay. You know, we talked a lot about elections here and maybe a little in Europe, but they're voting today in the Netherlands. And I know there's a populist candidate on the ballot there who they expect to do pretty well, and which could be a sign of sort of things to come in Europe as more and more of these populist candidates find their way to leadership, or at least in an election position for leadership. Does what happens in the Netherlands today, do you think, have much of an impact on the stock market tomorrow?
I don't think so, but I do agree with you that populism being on the rise in Europe is one of those things that tends to increased volatility. So Ms. Le Pen is also running, of course, in France. She is not expected to win. And of course, there's a runoff election. You do the first one in April and then the final in May. But in everybody's projections for the final, she doesn't show up as the winner. But she's certainly taking a lot of the spotlight right now, much like Mr. Trump did. And we'll have to see whether or not she has that kind of Trumpian upset that no one's really looking for right now in France.
John, in our lifetime, can you think of an era where there was sort of a I don't want to say worldwide, because maybe Congressman King's world, what worldwide, but, you know, Western civilization or Europe and the U.S., a situation where there was sort of a united wave bringing in this sort of populism or any kind of unified candidate. I can't think of another time like this.
No, nor can I. And it does all tend to be stemming from folks that are rattled by the loss of their identity, I guess, from the mass immigration from Syria and other places in the Middle East where there's so much violence. I can't blame the people for wanting to get out. But obviously Sweden, Germany, France, the Netherlands, I mean, you name it, these places are having to deal with an awful lot of, like I say, loss of identity. And that's why the populism is on the rise
and,
in
you know,
those areas.
And that's the acute situation. But more generally, just over the decades, there's been kind of a dilution of individual countries and their own identity, certainly in Europe. So that leads to it, too. Okay, I don't want to take up too much time in sociology with you, though, because I know you're an expert on Wall Street. Well, we didn't even talk about, we're out of time. We'll talk a little bit more tomorrow. I will end the program about the Fed, but they started meeting today. Everyone's been talking about that. What are you watching on Wall Street today? Do you have any tips?
I still like the banks an awful lot. I think we're going to see at least 3 rate increases this year. I believe that takes J.P. Morgan through 100. It's about a $90 stock now. And so we were adding to long positions in J.P. Morgan and in Citigroup today.
All right. And so I think it was the wholesale prices or producer prices came out today, right?
Yes, sir.
In England, I read a story today that when they come up with their inflation gauge, you know, they have a sort of a basket of items that they use. They check the prices and that's how they figure out inflation. They have added now for the next report bottles of gin. Apparently, British consumption of gin is so high now that they figure that's almost a staple. So that's going to go into their figuring.
Can you imagine what they'd have to figure in the Chicagoland area for beer?
I can imagine that. Yes, I can. Especially this weekend.
With the Cubs winning.
John Najarian, great to talk to you again. We'll see you next week.
Likewise. Thank you, Stephen.
It's 12:23. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Andrew Herman is in the studio, an editor at DNA Info Chicago, to talk about openings and closings around the city. And well, we got one that's real dead closed, but we're gonna try to bring it back. Andrew, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hi, Steve.
Okay, I always called it Maury Magus Sports, but that was after the guy, right? But it was MC Magus or Magus.
Yeah, Sporting well, Gis? I think there was actually it was Magus Sports started in the '20s in the old Maxwell Street area, and then Maury Magus was the son, and he did a lot of TV commercials, so people called the story Maury Magus, and then later on it was MC Magus, and then it disappeared. But this fabulous old building at 620 North LaSalle,
which is what, Ohio and LaSalle,
Ontario,
okay,
yeah, and it's you know, the 8-story building. It was always decorated in such a way that you couldn't miss it, and was really a sort of a landmark for me as a kid coming downtown. When you see this building, you know you're downtown.
Right. Well, and because when we were kids, there weren't sporting goods stores. I mean, there weren't a lot of sport. There certainly weren't chains. There weren't Sport Marts. There wasn't Dick's. There wasn't all of that. You know, there were the big individual stores, and Magus was certainly one of those.
Yeah, so he called this the world's largest sporting goods store, and it's been empty for a while. The Sports Authority was in there last. It closed last year, and now the company that owns it is looking to redevelop it, and they released some renderings that shows it as an office building.
Well, now, wait a minute. So I don't think I was in there as when it was Sports Authority, but when it was Magus, it was one of those things where there wasn't 50 linear feet that was on the same floor.
Right.
Right. You'd have to walk up 2 steps and down a step and over a step. And
yeah,
it was very uneven place.
Stuff was piled all over. And, you know, you had to figure out if you needed, I don't know, if you're in Little League and you needed a new mitt, then that'd be on the 6th
right.
floor.
Or and 6 then, and a half.
Right.
Take the elevator to 6 and a half.
And then the spikes would be on a different floor. And it always seemed like they were on the loudspeaker in there, either yelling at each other or at the customers or something. morning, but it was quite a trip.
So I didn't mean to disrupt you. Mm-hmm. So this company that has owned it now for a few years, mm-hmm. they're talking about either tearing it down or trying to redevelop it. Right.
So they released some renderings of what it would look like as an office building, but they do say that if somebody wanted to build an office tower there, they could build a 17-story tall office tower there. So we'll see what happens. It's empty now, and
it seems like that's an area where there have been, right, Ed DeBevics was there. There was a pizza joint there that they've all been torn down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's down the street from the Rock and Roll McDonald's. It's still kind of an entertainment area, but you're right. They are building more housing down there.
And it's not a lot of, it's a difficult foot traffic area because of the intersection.
Yeah. Not a lot of parking.
I'm just talking it down so you and I can buy it.
Well, it's a famous place for people of a certain age.
Okay, so let's go up to Wicker Park. Fuzzy Wig Candy Factory.
Yeah.
I've never heard of these guys, but they were in Lakeview before. They've moved now to Wicker Park.
Sure. They're a Colorado-based chain. There's about 45 of them across the country, but they're opening a new one at 2105 West Division. They've moved from Clark Street in Lakeview. It's a really fun, cool place if you are looking for retro candy.
So
like
this is where I can get my candy cigarettes.
Chuckles, your Pixie Sticks, your Black Cows, Charleston Chews, all that stuff that we used to... Right. You know, eat as children. So, they have that there.
So all those sort of overweight, little past middle-aged guys who are going to cry when the wrecking ball hits Mages, we're all going to go up and meet at Fuzzy Wigs in Wicker Park and have our candy.
Absolutely.
Andrew Hermit. Okay, read more of this at dnainfo.com/Chicago.
Right.
Thanks for coming by. Appreciate it. Thank you very much, Ryan Burroughs. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're going to talk marijuana a little bit later in the show. Dan Lynn is the executive director of NORML. That's the group pushing for legalization of marijuana in Illinois. They got a couple of legislative days every year in the spring, and first one's coming up next week. And I was just reading an article on, I think it was CNBC today, about the signals coming from the White House, the new administration, that they might be cracking down on states that have legalized and in some cases decriminalized marijuana. So we'll talk with Dan about the situation in Illinois coming up. But around this time every week, we are joined by Suzanne Muchin, who's the co-host of The Big Payoff on WGN Plus and iTunes and just about everywhere else as they look at the women in the workplace. And she joins us on a phone line now this afternoon. I'm assuming she's got hot chocolate with marshmallows in it by the fire.
You know, I'm feeling a little bit like a wimp now. I told you guys today that I was not going to come in person in the midst of what truly felt like it was going to be Snowmageddon. It's kind of nice out now.
Let me tell you something. I need to take the train more. I just need to. But today it finally forced me to. And I was waiting in line for the bus. And it was just, I mean, I was covered in snow, but if you were doing it that way, it was kind of nice. It was kind of a pleasant snow. I don't think it's over, Suzanne. I think there's another round of lake effect snow ahead of us. So you just enjoy.
Okay, just save face for me, I kind of hope so.
You just put a little extra warm-up in that hot chocolate and you enjoy yourself today. Okay, so we don't always agree on things. By and large, I think we do. But I kind of love this story out of Texas with this state representative, Jessica Farrar is her name. And will you want to take it or you want me to take it?
Oh, Steve, I just feel like I need to hear you set this up.
Okay.
You're just so comfortable using some of the language in this article. Go for it.
I'm not going to say it until I have to. Okay. So one of the things that comes up when it comes to abortion restrictions around the country is legislatures force women to undergo other unnecessary things they don't have to do, and they say they're doing it in the name of the health of the woman. It's really they're just trying to intimidate them out of having an abortion. Well, here's a state representative in Texas, Jessica Farrar, an 11-term Democrat. She's introduced a bill that would require a, quote, medically unnecessary digital rectal exam, end quote, before any man undergoes a vasectomy or can be prescribed Viagra. I think that's beautiful.
It's beautiful. I also love that they have to have the rules explained to them in a new booklet entitled A Man's Right to Know. Because, right, as we know, this is something women are forced to read, A Woman's Right to Know. look, you know, you read an article like this. I know you're uncomfortable saying it. I will go there. It also suggests that there should be a $100 fine for men who masturbate.
Yeah, that to me is, I'm sorry she did that because it really misses the point. And the other one is just on point. It's so...
The other one's on point. This one was attention grabbing, but I think she actually is making some really important points. And you can read this and laugh and think it's funny, but she's making these very, very on point comparisons to the fact that women are being forced to undergo these unnecessary steps as they decide on a huge choice relative to their body. And for the most part, it is men. I mean, we just saw the image of Trump when he signed his bill and all men behind him. That image of men making the decision of how women should treat their bodies is really what's reflected
right
here in the reverse.
I think it's beautiful because it just points to the hypocrisy of all of it. And so
exactly.
It won't go anywhere.
It's great.
But I bet it's introduced in a few other states before it's over.
And look, you and I are talking about it. And if it gets even a couple of men to step back and just for a moment, because I think too often you can read these articles about.
No. Suzanne. When men read that, they're going to take a few steps back.
They may take a few steps back. Yes.
So you're talking about men making decisions for women. There was a great skit on Saturday Night Live. You know, it was Women's Day, last Wednesday.
And, last Wednesday.
They addressed that on Saturday Night Live this week. Listen to this.
The problem is how women are portrayed in the media. From a young age, women are taught that their value is how they look.
As a boy growing up, I never experienced that. That's not fair.
Thank you for saying that.
So the setup was that these two guys wrote a skit for the women, and what they really wrote was a bunch of men talking about what it's like to be women.
Right. And what it was really great about it was this was supposedly two sensitive men in the SNL cast writing a script and to sort of honor the women in the SNL cast. And meanwhile, when the camera pulls back, they've put all of the women at a table that is off camera. They've scripted themselves to have these really, you know, encouraging lines that makes them look great. And again, it's actually not so dissimilar from the conversation we just had, where what I think is coming forward is some of the hypocrisy. And again, Steve, we can agree or disagree issue by issue, but I think what's being brought to the surface is women want to have a voice. They want to speak for themselves. They don't want to have rules imposed on them by men in power, whether that's on the SNL stage or whether that's in the legislature or whether it's when they go to make choices about their body. And if we can say one thing that's come out of, you know, the whole movement since Trump's election is women are speaking out. I think they are searching for a voice and, you know, there's going to be a struggle to find the right voice on the right issues. But I'm loving it.
OK, so there's that. And now we've only got a minute left. I want to make sure we have time to talk about what is it you have against the domestic help in England? What is this?
You have to admit whether what you thought. So
okay,
we all
so
saw
let
the
me
viral
say, so,
video.
Right, so it's a video of this guy being interviewed on the BBC, and he looks like he's in an office. Clearly he's in his home office. And as he's being interviewed talking about foreign policy, this little toddler, 3 years old maybe, or 4 years old, runs into the room. And he reaches, I thought he was going to get grief because he was like, you know, backhanding his kid. I think he just was trying to keep her out of the shot. And then another kid comes in through in a little walkie thing, a rolly thing. And then you have this woman skidding into the room, grabbing the kids and pulling them out. Well, she looked like she was the caregiver.
Yes.
That was the assumption.
And so just admit, was that, when you saw the video, was that your read?
Absolutely. Okay. And let me tell you why. For two specific reasons, because I knew I was going to be challenged on this. She looked much younger than the guy.
Yes.
And she was a different race than the guy. And,
correct.
And I'm not going to apologize for making that leap because I don't think it's an illogical leap. But it turns out she's the guy's wife, or at least she was at the time.
Exactly. We don't know now. I just think, again, it was challenging so many of us. I had the same reaction. And look, again, we can tell ourselves that, hey, you know, she looked younger, whatever. But the point was, that's where our minds went. Yep. How would it be possible for this man in a suit to be possibly married to a woman who's so much younger, of a different race?
I really disagree with you, Suzanne. I really disagree with you.
What? What are you disagreeing with?
Well, I don't think we should have to apologize for coming to a logical conclusion. We can be wrong and say, oh, she's married to the guy. That's great. He's married to her. Okay, that's cool. My first reaction was this. I don't feel bad for taking the evidence I took in and making that leap. Now, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it doesn't mean I can't accept that they weren't married. My first blush was that they probably weren't.
I'm not suggesting you made the wrong call based on what you saw. I'm saying the stereotypes behind that a man would need to be, in fact, married to a woman who looked more like him and who possibly dressed more professionally like him. The fact that if that's not the case, it has to be a nanny. That's the issue that we should all.
I don't agree with. I mean, look, you looked out the window today and thought it was going to be snowy.
I did.
Right?
And that's, it was snowy.
And I support you. That was a logical assumption. And I don't think an offense to take the visual cues and to say, well, that probably was the caregiver.
Where did
because she burst into the room like her job depended on it. I gotta go. Suzanne Mushin, co-host of The Big Payoff. Check it out at WGN Plus. Thanks, and stay warm today. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Steve.
It's
you
the
too.
Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Well, that's just perfect. It's 12:52. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. National Potato Chip Day. What makes you want a potato chip more than, Dan Lin is on the phone. He is the executive director of Normal in Illinois, which is a group working toward the normalization of marijuana laws around the country. Dan, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So, come on. The potato chip thing was a little funny.
You know, we get no shortage of the pun jokes in the world that I live in.
I apologize. Okay, so I just wanted to talk to you because I know you're going down to Springfield next week. And you know, Illinois seems to be moving toward, if not legalization, toward a liberalization of marijuana laws. But now you've got this change in administration in Washington. President Trump talked about leaving it to the states, but Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, seems to indicate that he's going to crack down on states that legalize or liberalize their marijuana laws. Are you guys worried?
Not really. I see that as more just political chest pounding. You know, if you look at the amount of jobs that have been created in this industry in those states that have legalized it, if you look at the amount of tax revenue that they're bringing in, that's going to speak much louder than any of these kind of antiquated ideas about, you know, should we allow people to grow and consume this plant?
But they can be intimidating, can they not? I mean, I know there was an issue with banking in Colorado when they first legalized things. I'm assuming that's all been cleared up. But the federal policy can sort of thwart or mute the movement toward legalization.
Oh, absolutely. And for what it's worth, the banking issue has not been resolved because the federal government still does not consider this plant to be a medicine, nor do they respect any of the states that have legalized it recreationally.
Okay, explain
so
that,
it really is a cash-based business.
And then explain that, Dan, for the people listening, because that's really a weird thing, and it puts people in the business at risk because they're carrying big amounts of cash around.
Yeah, because the scheduling on the federal level still classifies cannabis as having no medical value and right along drugs such as heroin and LSD, the banks don't want to deal with this industry. Even if it's a state-licensed and state-regulated program, such as the Illinois Medical Cannabis Program, or like in Colorado, their recreational program, a lot of the larger banks across the nation do not want to open accounts for these businesses.
So you've got to pay in cash. The business has to take your cash. And then at the end of the day, the bad guys know they're leaving the store with wads of cash to go to the bank.
Yeah. The only real people that benefits is the criminals as well as the armored truck businesses that will go in and take the money out of these businesses. But there's no reason that we should be dealing with a cash-only business in the 21st century.
I didn't realize that was an issue here in Illinois, too. I did not know that. All right. So when you go down next week, what are you hoping to have heard? What are you hoping to come away with?
Well, we want to find some lawmakers that are willing to sponsor some legislation that would legalize and regulate the adult cannabis market. You know, we look at how much money Colorado is bringing in And last year, it looks like Colorado did over $1 billion in cannabis sales legally. You know, we have about three times the population of Colorado. So by the, you know, simple math in my head, you know, we could be looking at a potential $3 billion industry in Illinois if we just brought it out from the underground and legalized it and made these people real business folks.
It seems to me like the lawmakers and the governor are looking for a new revenue stream. This might be one.
Absolutely. We're probably the only population in Illinois that are actively saying, please tax us, tax this product, let us be legal, and take our money here. So I don't think there's a lot of other folks with that type of a situation.
Okay, that's the message. Do you expect it to be received well down there?
I think that there's going to be some resistance, not only from some of the usual players that have resisted this over the course of history, like the law enforcement community, the drug testing industry, but now that you have this, you know, medical cannabis industry that has a vested interest with large amounts of dollars invested, you know, they're going to be wanting to protect their investments, so they may run up against us as well.
Are they on your team?
We know that it depends on the actual language of the law. You know, if we were to legalize it tomorrow and they're the only distributors and producers, I think that a lot of them would be favorable towards it. However, if we were to legalize it and have very low barriers to entry and really try to create a cottage industry for small business entrepreneurs, that's where they're going to probably be a little bit reluctant to embrace it, given how much money they had to invest to get a piece of the action with the medical program.
Look, the situation, you've made great success over the past 25 years. I mean, it's pretty remarkable where we are. What are your chances of success with normalization or legalization in Illinois?
I think we'll see legalization in the next 5 years.
Next 5 years. All right. Dan Lynn, Executive Director of Normal. Good luck with that next week, and I appreciate you joining us today.
All right. Thanks a lot.